And this prompted McFall to flip his wig.
Well, it just, there was stuff boiling. It was just stuff boiling, and that was just the little too much salt in the water to make it boil over is all that was.
Mm, right? So many flavors, and you choose salty.
These days, the comic book owns pop culture. Literature, movies, television, even music. You'll find it all in the panel of your favorite comic book. Us, we're living the comic's life. We're breaking the panel.
Welcome to Breaking the Panel, where we go in-depth and in-between and in-and-out on all the topics that you like to discuss about comics. When you don't have friends, you have us. I don't know if that makes us sad or you, but we're all happy to be here. Let's talk some geeky, full frontal nerdity kind of goodness today. I am a rock out of podcasting, Charles McFall, one of my faithful companions in the travels that we make, Paul Klotz.
Faithful? How do you know?
Well, you're here every week so far. You know, that's that true. Wisdom guy, he can't be bothered.
Oh, he's going to be so mad when he hears that.
Yes.
It's going to be great.
It is going to be great. And then, of course, Brian Emmett steps away every other week. This week is his off week. Next week, he'll be gone as well because he'll be in Vegas and be tied. Well, okay. I don't know if he'll be really tied up, but he'll be otherwise occupied. And then our faithful come to the rescue when the alarm sounds. Host of all hosts, Travis Jones.
Whoa, everybody, what's happening? Glad to be here. Love breaking the panel. I'm going to break the issues.
Then there you go. Bing.
What? Like the rules. Language, sir.
Forgot. It's not my show. I forgot.
All right. Yeah. So real quick, some business to attend to. We have been nominated for a podcast award. I'm very, very excited about that. It means a lot to us as a whole, a lot to me as a podcast veteran and Brian Ebbett as a podcast veteran to have our brand new show get nominated for an award. And of course, for Paul Klotz and Chris Wisdom, just being able to be, you know, have a show. This is your first time out and you got nominated as far as that goes. So we're all very excited. So here's what you do. Podcast voting is open until June 12th. Go to podcastawards.com
every day.
Vote for every day. You can vote once a day, every day, but you can only do it once. So make sure you vote for all the shows you like. The two that we suggest, of course, Breaking the Panel in Entertainment and From the Helicarrier in Gaming. Vote for both of those and then add any other categories you want. One vote per category per day. You have to submit it one time. Once you submitted it once that day, you can't come back until the next day. It resets at like 2 a.m., I think is what the clock rolls over at. So please do that for us. It really means a lot. It'll really help get the word out about the show, and we could really use your help. So, Klotz, you actually held up your end of the bargain this week. I totally forgot we even had a show today. I'm just going to throw myself under the bus.
For shame.
I am. Even Travis Jones, like, I'm like, hey, can you guest on the show? I'm like, yeah. And he's like hitting me up, like, we're doing a show, right? Like, oh, crap. Yes. So, yeah. So, Klotz, you've got the story. So, why don't you take it off, sir?
Well, this is a follow up on a previous conversation. In recent weeks, we discussed the end of the season for most of the TV, you know, the comic book related TV shows that are on television. Among all of that news, you know, we discussed the fact that Agent Carter did not get renewed, you know, got the chop. But Haley Atwell recently at MegaCon had some words to say. Basically, to sum it up, is she's not giving up on Agent Carter. She's 100% committed to playing Peggy Carter in any possible revival of the show. You know, the other show that she's on is it's called a legal drama called Conviction. That's actually an ABC show. So she's still kind of in-house in her commitment. So it's actually entirely feasible that something could happen. You know what I mean? That she could, you know, have the opportunity to be on her new show that she's helming, but also, you know, end up back on something that they do with Agent Carter. What do you gentlemen think about that?
I'm totally stoked for it because I love Haley Atwell. I think I said the last time I was on this show that I would spend an hour a night just watching her wash her hair, brush her teeth.
Yes, I do remember the cringe-worthy comment.
Yeah, the stalker came right on you. Yes, we tried to.
She brings that out in me, man. She brings out the best.
You're going to grab your fireman's axe and break down our door. And...
Oh, sorry. I thought there was a fire in here. I'm going to kill you. Never mind.
Now, I was about to do a Big Johnson t-shirt quote. And I couldn't do it. It's just, I think it crosses that stalker line just a little too much.
Oh, God.
I like Haley Atwell. Going back and watching, what's the show, Klotz, that you turned me on to from the BBC on Netflix?
Black Mirror.
Yes. Black Mirror?
Yeah.
Yeah. So she's in one of those episodes, seeing her younger and in a whole different kind of category, in a whole different character. It was very interesting. The only reason I would care is if they give me what I want, which is the S.H.I.E.L.D. formation, the sci-fi comic booky one-off stories. Right. You know, even if it's tromping through Europe with the Howling Commandos to find the relics and clean up after World War II. See, now that's a show I'd watch. Take it, your S.H.I.E.L.D. is being founded. Take it to Europe after World War II to clean up all these relics that the Nazis left lying around. That would be awesome.
Yeah, it would be. That would be a great show.
Other than that, I don't know. They'd really have to work to get me on board. Because the second season, just I watched all forward to every episode, but the whole time I was like, eh. And that was it. That was the whole thing. Yeah.
I mean, I think they definitely need to go back to the, you know, the beginning here and kind of try to figure out what they want to do, and kind of recalibrate the show, because obviously the second season didn't work. I mean, frankly, a lot of folks that I talked to, you know, they'd ask me, "Have you watched it yet?" And I'm like, "No." And then I'd ask other people, I'd be like, "Did you watch it?" And they're like, "No." And it's like, when everybody who I know to be frequent comic book fans that, you know, watch all the movies, watch all the shows, when most of us who were very, you know, thrilled with the first season of Agent Carter all have the same response, like, "Oh, I watched an episode or two," or "No, not really," that says something. So, I mean, I think you lost a huge chunk of your audience there with the direction you went with this season. So, you know, recalibrate, go back in. Maybe, you know, it doesn't have to be a full-length show. If they want to keep doing this, you know, mid-season filler thing that they were doing before, that's fine. That actually frees you up. That lets you do like a BBC style thing where you can like do a whole story arc in maybe 5 or 6 episodes or something like that, and really just kind of make it like, you know, a broken up like movie type thing, feature film length type thing, or, well, you know, like 2 films.
Yeah. Kind of like Infinity Gauntlet 1 and 2.
Yeah. So basically, I think there's opportunity there, and you don't have to try to fill it, because I've noticed that a lot of these TV shows have a hard time where they're doing so much filler to try to fill out the whole season. You know, you see it with even the good ones like Flash. Flash is arguably the best comic show on TV right now, but there are absolutely episodes that are just filler episodes that are like, we're going to move the plot forward very marginally of the season, but we're going to, you know, deal with the villain of the week and solve the problem and have a little interpersonal drama. And it's like, you know, you could probably cut an easy 5 to 6 episodes a season out of a show like that, and it would just feel a lot more streamlined, a lot tighter, you know what I mean? It wouldn't be on for the same length of time. So I see why they do it to a certain degree. With a show like this, it's not quite the same appeal, but it's still an important part of the history of the MCU. So people want to see this stuff, and people definitely want to see, you know, Agent Carter herself out there. Yeah. So.
Well, like the first season, the first season was, I mean, the coolest thing to me about the first season was the introduction of the Black Widows. And we got to see that aspect of the Black Widow program and everything. I mean, just even though it was a kind of like a side story almost, it really didn't play into the overall plot of the first season. It was still awesome. Mm-hmm. And I, back to what Charles said, give me stuff like that. Yeah, it could be hunting down Hydra relics. It could be hunting Hydra for all I care, or just, you know, doing stuff with the Howling Commandos. That would be awesome as well. But just give me something that the fan base would recognize.
How do you like, and I could be totally wrong with my actors, this is just my memory, we know how that works, but I believe, if I'm correct, how do you like that Damian Dark is Dum Dum Dugan?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Is that right? Is that right? Yeah.
Yeah, right.
It's just like, in one universe, totally badass cool dude. The other universe, totally badass douchebag.
Yeah. You know? He's a good actor. I like that.
Well, he's just like, he's such a great actor for that kind of thing. He really, like, and he's got so much range and personality that doesn't often get explored. I mean, that's the reality, is that he doesn't always get to be unleashed. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Well, he's likable. He's so likable and charismatic. Even as a villain, he's just, you still kind of like him. He's snarky. He's kind of smart ass. And you love to hate him when he's a villain. And you want to hang out and drink beer with him when he's a good guy. So that's pretty cool repertoire to have as an actor.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
I do too. So back to Hayley Atwell. Does this article make you think is an actual possibility, or is this basically, for lack of a better term, just words in the atmosphere?
Well, okay. So this accomplishes a couple things. One of the big things is that I very, very much feel like her saying that she's still committed to the character kind of dispels some of the fears that we even discussed here, that maybe she wasn't into it, or that she pursued this other opportunity. I think she pursued this other opportunity because she realized that this wasn't getting the traction it needed to.
Well, they probably had a heads up that it probably, I mean, at some point they knew ahead of time it wasn't being renewed. And I mean, because they're on the same network, so you're under contract. So if you're on the same network, I don't think you can pursue another opportunity if they know we're going to lock you in here. Or I mean, there's got to be talks, right? There has to be open communication. Say, yes, you can do two shows on the same network. We have to work the timing out. So it's not just like, oh, hey, we might not make it. Go put your resume in somewhere else. It's like you said, it's the same network. It had to be, we like what you did. We want to keep you going kind of deal in my mind anyway.
Well, do you guys remember mm-hmm. when Barenthal was, you know, cast as Punisher? I'm sure you do. Everybody does. But, like, mm-hmm. the thing that I loved the most about when they cast Barenthal was how he embraced the character. Like, he was posting on Instagram, you know, in front of a gun rack, and he was just... He was becoming the Punisher. Like, he was so into it, it made me more into it because he was excited to be playing that part.
Exactly.
So, and I think maybe Haley's doing this just to be, you know, a good employee, a smart actress, and, you know, you don't ever want to badmouth anything. And, of course, you know, she doesn't want to burn any bridges and keep that option open for another job possibly. To come back to be Agent Carter. But maybe she's like, it seemed to me from the interview that she was really into it. Like, she wants to do more with a strong female role in this universe.
I think that's what kept me watching that whole John, you referred to John Bernthal and how much he's into it. I dug her from the beginning because of how much she seemed to really love the character and love the stories. That and Mr. Jarvis, those were the two characters/actor/actresses that made me care about the show. The rest of the show didn't make me necessarily care about the show. The story around the first season was decent. Some of the acting was bad. You know, Thompson was quite crappy in my opinion. The love interest, the cripple guy, I can't remember his name. I've liked the actor in other shows, and I liked him, but only because I liked him in other shows. He was kind of a middle ground character for me. So, yeah, that whole love would make me go, okay, she loves this character. She has said yes to whatever the next Carter project is. I will at least give it a shot.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Well, keep in mind that having the enthusiasm of the actor or actress playing a certain role kind of out there in the conversation helps build momentum for a project to get followed through on. I mean, Deadpool, we talk about Deadpool all the time. Granted, I mean, it came to be largely because that footage was leaked. And I think, like, from watching the special features on the Deadpool DVD, I'm fairly certain that it was somebody internal to the process who had done test footage and who was involved in what had already been done. You know what I mean? And I'm pretty sure that was supposed to be the kick in the pants that it did end up turning out to be, which is great. But like Ryan Reynolds' commitment to that character and saying, I want to do this. I really want to do this. I love this character. I want to make this happen. This is the same kind of thing where it's like, okay, so now people can rally behind this and say, ABC, come on. Like, that's why I try to be the voice of reason and stuff like this. And it's like, there's a place for her. You just misused her the last season. So fix it and put her back out there. You know what I mean? Do something different. Maybe even just do like a special or a mini series or something for her. you don't have to do a full season. You know, you can do, or even one of the half seasons that they use for the mid season filler. Like, just do like a couple, you know, a 2-3 hour miniseries.
Yes, that's what I was going to say. I'll take a miniseries, a summertime miniseries, a ABC.com miniseries, a Netflix miniseries.
And that would be a fantastic way to fill a gap in the schedule when there's not a prominent MCU thing going on. Like when Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. isn't on TV, when there's not a movie coming out for a few months. All right, boom. You know, we're going to release a couple episodes of this little bit of the Carter story. You know what I mean? So I definitely think that there's still room out there for this. You can definitely, you know, reapproach this whole strategy and try to find a way to fit her in and continue to tell that story. I think we've kind of gone long on this at this point. Because, you know, really, ultimately, all that's saying is she's still interested, which is great news. So that reassures me. Now, in another follow-up topic here, I just saw this was posted in the Marvel subreddit that Captain America, Steve Rogers, Captain America issue 1 sold out and got a print reorder. Now, this being the issue that has the heavily controversial big reveal of Steve Rogers' potential loyalties or servitude. I don't know how to put it. Like, who's pulling the puppet strings? We don't know yet. But basically, this book, I think the controversy fueled sales. What do you guys think? I mean,
oh yeah, of course. I without a doubt.
I mean, I guess the reason I brought this to the table this week was, does this not somehow justify what they did, though?
I never said that what they did was dumb. It's a great marketing move. I had a knee-jerk reaction, to be honest. So
I agreed with you. I'm in the camp of people like, I don't care for this because I see it as a marketing ploy, and I don't care for I don't like that. I don't see much artistic integrity in this move, because I'm sure they're going to reverse it fairly soon. You know what I mean? Or at least, like, we're going to figure out it's a Manchurian Candidate, Winter Soldier type thing or something like that. I don't know. We'll figure it out. Like, we'll get there. And, you know, it's a tough situation, because I know the physical print media business is tough. And so they got to find ways to get people to buy these books. And it also came out at the same time as DC Rebirth did. And I don't know about, like, in your areas, guys, but my local comic shop sold out of DC Rebirth number 1 very quickly. Gone in the first day or so. And they're talking about not getting any more issues for another couple weeks. So that's two, you know, pretty monumental books that came out pretty much the same day that are sold out, in at least in some areas, if not everywhere. So I guess it's like, I just want to follow up on the topic and say, I mean, if you wanted to sell comic books, I guess mission accomplished.
Yeah. What you got, Travis? Travis is raising his hand politely.
Man, I know a guy that did a great review on both of those books you just talked about.
Would that be the Blazing Defender?
Maybe? Yeah, maybe. Might be that guy. No, I did a show yesterday. Actually, I just put it online today. That was the first book I reviewed, was the Cat book. And I did a pros and cons list, because I, like you, Charles, had kind of a knee-jerk reaction to it. And after I read it the third time, because I had to go back and read it 3 times just to make sure that I wasn't just being emotional about the book. I'm a big Nick Spencer fan. He's done some really good stuff, so I'm kind of like putting it in his hands. I just didn't feel like this was the story that needed to be told. It's kind of been done before in Cap's past, but there is kind of a I call it a fan theory, because somebody put it out there. But I don't want to spoil the book for anybody, and I try not to in my review, even, because I want people to kind of come to their own opinions.
Well, I think everybody knows about it, though. I mean,
oh yeah, it's been spoiled well beyond what you could do
through the book. There's flashback sequences, okay, to Steve as a child with his mom, and everybody knows that Steve's father was abusive. Well, a person kind of is introduced in Steve's history that is kind of changing events, and at the end of the book, of course, you know, we know what Steve does, and it all looks like that something has changed, whether it's mind control or whatever. Now, we all know that Steve got his abilities back in the last big Marvel event by a little girl that is basically the embodiment of the Cosmic Cube. She gave Steve back his super soldier serum. So the Cosmic Cube can also manipulate reality.
Is that the little girl? Man, what was it? I think it was Civil War. Does she hang at Quicksilver protects her? She hangs out with the adult there, Quicksilver?
No, actually, Maria Hill found this little girl and was using her to create an alternate reality prison for villains.
That's Maria Hill. That sounds like Maria Hill.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
It's kind of like, okay, maybe not mind control. It may be something else, something bigger. And we know that in the book, Eric Selvig is kidnapped by Zemo, and Eric Selvig is the master of tracking cosmic waves. So we figure Zemo's got Selvig to find Kobik and you manipulate her to his plans. So, there was a lot of good things about the issue after I read it the third time, but I mean, there was videos of people dousing this comic book with gasoline and lighting it on fire.
Maybe that's why they need to order more.
Yeah. God, it burns. There's been another one.
Burning.
But I honestly, it's been a long time since I've seen a comic book that had that kind of reaction. It was like it was almost like people stomping on the flag. Like, people were mad that they were making Cap like some kind of sleeper Hydra agent. They were very upset.
Well, I think, because I kind of started to say this last week on the show, I kind of feel like for a lot of people, Cap is very representative of the American ideal the way it should be. You know, and I think so when you mess with that character at a time that is as politically volatile as our current climate is. Yeah. I mean, this is 2016. We have an insane, literally insane presidential campaign going on right now. No matter what side of it you're on, everybody across the board is acknowledging that we live in an insane political climate right now in this country. And so, like, when we look to stuff like Civil War, for example, and say, you know, sometimes some of these characters transcend just being comic book characters, and they talk about the feeling that people have at a certain era, you know? And, I mean, I talked about Winter Soldier being a film that it was kind of like cosmically aligned to come out just after the Ed Snowden situation, where, you know, we had a national conversation about how much surveillance, is too much, how much of our liberty should we sacrifice in the name of safety, and so on and so forth. And then there's a movie that comes out a couple months later, literally 3-4 months later, that addresses that very issue in a very entertaining way, but also, explores some of that topic. And I think Cap, Cap being center of that storyline, center to Civil War, Cap is kind of like, the American dream embodied in a character, but with that unshakable moral ground of he's always trying to do his best to do the right thing. And so when you completely undermine that and make him potentially, a puppet or a double agent or something like that, you just kind of you kind of pull the rug out from underneath people who have some hope that there's goodness left in the world, kind of in a way. You know what I mean? I think that's why people responded so strongly.
Agree. And this is where I give Chris Wisdom his room to dislike that movie that I really don't want to talk about anymore. Because what you do...
Oh, that's unfortunate, because I had planned about 20 minutes
of time. No! But what you do is when you're reading these things, you're identifying one way or the other with a character, right? In Captain America, you're identifying with the standard of what is best, what can be good. Why do you think everybody quotes that little throwaway line, tiny, tiny, tiny throwaway line in the beginning of Avengers 2, language? Because it's such a resonating thing for him. And they mock him in the movie. But even today, I was on a chat on a Twitch feed, and I said, I literally typed F-word, because I didn't know the audience there, so I didn't want to go all out. And somebody went, language. And instantly I knew they were being the Captain America right. thing. And they even cleared it up because they didn't know me either. Like, I was quoting the movie. I was like, no, I got it. I totally got you were quoting Captain America in the movie. You know, it's because we resonate with he's better than us. And no matter what happens to him, he's better. And I get why Chris didn't like Superman questioning his humanity. I get why other people haven't liked other things about characters, because we put what we want into the character. Mm-hmm. And even I, without reading the, even I didn't even read all the news stories. Without reading the comic or all the news stories, I was like, you know, this isn't right. But after a week has gone by, I went back to the normal person that I am. Went, let's give them a chance to see right. where they're going. And I knew Travis would tackle this on the show, and I'm very glad he did. I want to take a quick chance to plug your show, sir. Is you want to get honest comic book opinions, ones that aren't going to tell you, oh, this is horrible and go burn your books. He's going to say, what did you say? You said you did a pro and con yeah. list. You just gave an open review of that, an open review of Birth. And you said, these are my opinions. Here's where I could see other opinions, but this is what I think. That's Blazing Defender Report. You can find that on GiantSizeTeamUp.com and over on YouTube.com as well. And that's exactly why I watch that and listen to it, is to get some information and education. And I think the internet could use a hell of a lot more education. in its world.
I want to just real quick, like what Paul was talking about the Cap story, what you were just saying about, you know, and you too, Charles, like, you know, Cap is, he's like the perfect person, you know what I mean? And as weird as it sounds, like when I'm based with a morality decision, I think about that sometimes, like Cap wouldn't have done that. Cap wouldn't have blew his horn at that old lady that just walked, you know, walked across the no walk sign. Cap wouldn't have done that. You know what I mean? So, he's an icon. He's the epitome of what we feel like a true American is. But in this story, that I feel like there's so much that hasn't been done with him. I want to make him more, more relatable to the average guy. Like in Civil War, I can see the argument that people made that Cap did what he did in Civil War from a selfish standpoint. He wasn't being just altruistic. He really wanted to. He wanted Bucky to be safe. He was doing whatever he could for Buck because he felt maybe guilty about letting Buck die, okay, in Cap 1. So it was kind of like Cap 1 maybe was maybe doing selfish things in Civil War, and, you know, and I want to see that story. I want to see Cap more relatable. I think he's a hard character to write. I think he's a hard character to write well sometimes. I mean, Ed Brubaker's done it the best so far. I mean, a lot of characters can go back to writers and go, oh, this guy was great, this guy was great. Really, Ed Brubaker, to me, is the only guy that's gotten Cap right. So much more to see, and I kind of wish they'd have went a different way. But I'm for Nick Spencer. I'm like you, Charles. I'm gonna see where the story goes.
And then what you were saying about it could, I mean, the possibilities of it being an alternate reality, rewriting of history through time travel or the bending of time, you know, those kind of things. We just saw the end of The Flash, and there's some time things going on there that, again, if you haven't seen it yet, this hasn't been 2 weeks, so I'm not going to spoil it. But even watching, I went, I honestly just don't know what I think about that.
Right.
I don't fully accept it on face value, just like this. I don't fully go, wow, yeah, let's go that way. But it also goes, I'm going to wait and see what they've done. They've earned my trust this far. I'm going to see what they're going to do. And that's the same with Marvel in general. Everybody makes a misstep, but Marvel's earned my trust to somewhat take back my comments from last week that said, they should never do this. This is horrible. To, you know what? Let's see right. where they go with it.
Well, you know, I mean, you raise a really good point there, Charles. I always have an issue with, like, timeline stuff, alternate reality stuff, like retconning in general just feels gross to me. Like, and I mean that because my big problem with it is I think it undermines the authenticity of the content. Like, it's very hard to have any faith in the stories that are being told when at a moment's notice you could just have the rug pulled out from right. you like this.
Yeah.
And I think that it ultimately, you know, when I look at the history of my experience with comic books, at times when they've lost me have been times when they've done stuff like this. Like, I'm a huge Spider-Man fan when I was growing up, and then Clone Saga came along. And Clone Saga, like, presented the, you know, the very basic, like, couple issues in. It's like, oh, the Peter Parker that you've known and been reading in these books for years is a clone. And I'm like, what the hell, man?
Right.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that, you just, not that character isn't still the character, but it's just like, you've just put doubt where doubt didn't need to be about, you know, whether this guy is the real deal or not. Because, you know, and that's, and you make that character start doubting themselves. And it's like, that gets frustrating after a while when it's just like, come on, man, like, is nothing permanent, you know, is nothing real anymore because it can just be changed at any given time. It's one of my big hangups with Doctor Who as a television program. You know, I hate the fact that I call it the Deus Ex Machina hand wave. We fix everything by the end of this. A few people died, but no problem.
Right.
You know, and they just do that all the time. And one of the things I liked about Legends of Tomorrow is that even though it deals with time travel and stuff, it doesn't do that. As a matter of fact, it very rarely did that throughout the series. There were a lot of times where they went to go prevent the bad thing or fix the thing, and it doesn't work. I mean, and they kind of like summed it up as being like, well, time wants to happen and it's going to force.
And the whole concreting and jelly. Yeah.
Right. And which is, you know, that's complicated storytelling. And I think they did lose sight of where they were going a few times.
We saved H.G. Wells.
But ultimately, like that, these stories have to have some permanence. You know, they have to be things that happen, have to have a little bit of concrete, you know, nature to them. And they don't right now. We've been through so many reboots in recent years through the TV shows, the movies, the comic books themselves. I mean, we just had a huge event where we merged multiple realities and, you know, the multiverse, basically, or at least Marvel's version of it. It's tough to, you can't keep playing in that playground if you want people to have faith. And that's really, I think, ultimately what just happened with this whole Cap thing is you just shook. It was the straw, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it was just, people are kind of get tired of getting shaken up all the time because you want to sell some comic books or get some people to tune into a show or something. When you just use that, you know, you just beat that stick every time you need to drum up a little bit
of
excitement. But it
worked for this time, you know?
It did. And that's why I brought this topic up because, you know, they sold a lot of comic books. And it's like, I'm sure there's speculators out there that are like, I'm going to buy this book because when this arc is amazing, this is going to go down in history as being one of the best books ever printed, and people are going to want to pay me
money
for it.
Maybe.
Well, I mean, in the perfect example that was brought up last time was Superior Spider-Man. You know, Superior Spider-Man happens. Otto as Spider-Man, people are like, F this. Yeah, this is garbage. This is the worst storytelling ever. And by the end of it, a lot of the detractors were like, I'm an idiot. Like, this was amazing. This was, you know, emotional and impactful. This told a story and showed sides of both of those characters, both Peter and Otto, that, you know, we've never gotten to explore before. This was incredible. Yeah. And it was well done. And, you know, so we might say the same thing about this, you know, a few months or weeks or years down the road here.
I really am.
I sincerely hope they find a way to make this work out so that everybody eats crow that was as upset as we were. Because I'd rather eat crow and have things work out than be vindicated in it being a real poor decision.
Now, I'm going to cut that beautiful speech that Klotz just did and put it in front of a Ghostbusters launch movie statement.
We are not talking about dumpster fires right
too
now.
Late. Okay? Too late. I get to say, oh, hey, Klotz, what do you think about Ghostbusters? You'll have that great speech about, man, I hope it works out.
Hey, I've said that from the beginning. I don't want that movie to be terrible. I don't want anything that is potentially awesome to suck.
Yes.
I mean, you know, that it kind of rolls us into our next topic that we'll get to in just a minute here. You know, we're going to talk about X-Men Apocalypse. We're not, you know, we're obviously not doing a big panel show like we have for a lot of the MCU movies and stuff.
Partially because it's really hard to do that many movies back to back.
Right. It's been a busy season. We already did two in the last.
And
month.
I believe there's a show out there called Meatheads on Movies that would cover something good like that.
I do believe that show is coming up.
But real quick, before we dig into the next part of this conversation, Charles, do you want to tell us a few things about Loot Crate?
I do. I was going to say, you know what we always want to succeed that never sucks is Loot Crate. Loot Crate for May of 2016 is... No, June. I'm sorry. June. They typed it wrong. I'm reading right off the paper. I'm reading off the copy that they gave me. No, June's... They just didn't check the typo there. But the June of 2016, we are now down to Dystopia. So you're talking about RoboCop, Terminator 2, Judgment Day, and The Matrix, plus Bioshock Infinite and Fallout 4. This dude, this box has got my name written all over it. Travis, you just need to forward yours on to my address this time. I'm just saying. But they've got a figure, cool collectibles, and of course, their dystoporific monthly tea. That's exactly what they wrote. It's a great line, but it's hard for me to deliver that with a straight face. But I love The Matrix. I love all this stuff. RoboCop. Terminator 2 is really good. One of my favorite Terminators. Bioshock Infinite is amazing. And Fallout 4. So that's what you're going to get for June. Here's how you do it. For less than $20 a month, you'll get all this gear and more. You have until the 19th of each month at 9 p.m. Pacific, midnight Eastern, to receive that month's crate, to sign up and get on that list. Otherwise, it's over. Like last month, you just missed out on everything. Make sure you head over to lootcrate.com/giant-size-team-up and enter code giant-size-team-up to save $3 off on any new subscription. And that will help you out, and that will work on all the different boxes. So we highly encourage you to go over there. Man, I wish, and this is a little behind baseball, you know, I don't always buy what I pitch, but I have owned Loot Crate for over a year. I had it, and I just got to where I had to change some finance and stuff. But this box, it really has my name all over it. It makes me go, God, wordy words that have to get cut out. That's what it says. I love Loot Crate. And so there you go. Check out lootcrate.com/giant-size-team-up and sign up today. Now, we were talking about, are we moving on to the petition? Is that what we're talking about? Are you, no. You wanted to talk about X-Men right now.
Yeah, we'll roll into X-Men real quick here. So basically, X-Men Apocalypse came out this past weekend. We're recording on the 2nd of June right now. And we have a really interesting, exciting, topical conversation that we're going to roundtable in a couple weeks on the show. Yeah. But not today.
Based on a tantrum by McFall.
we don't have Brian and we don't have Chris with us today. And we really wanted to save it for when we had the full crew. And who knows, maybe we'll pull somebody else in too and really dig into the topic of critics and, you know, the whole conversation about, you know, the validity of critics and aggregate sites like, you know, Metacritic and Rotten Tomatoes and stuff like
it's
that.
It's like critics, reviews, numbers, and how people perceive them.
Right. We're going to dig into that in the future. So stay tuned to that. A couple weeks from now, we'll probably get into that. Today, though, because what prompted this is I hit up our private group on Facebook with the comment a couple days ago before I saw the film. Oh, man, X-Men Apocalypse getting, you know, a then 47%. From the critics on Rotten Tomatoes, and at the time about 74% from fans, from, you know, the public, and this prompted McFall to flip his wig.
Well, there was stuff boiling. It was just stuff boiling in. That was just the little too much salt in the water to make it boil over is all that was.
Right. So many flavors, and you choose salty. Now, the interesting part of this is I went to see the film. Yes. Travis, you saw the film, but Charles, you did not get out yet, right?
No, and there's probably a solid chance that I won't get the seat in the theater while it's out.
I would argue the case that that might be for the best.
Okay. I would probably agree
to that. Basically, just wanted to talk. So I'm going to give my brief feelings on this film. We're not going to get super spoilerific, but there are going to be some spoilers here. So if you haven't seen the film yet and you intend to see it in theaters, you might want to pause and come back to this episode at another time. Pause because you're definitely coming back, right?
On a lot of podcasts, there's a little fast forward button.
So this kind of ties into another conversation we did want to have today about fandom. And I guess like what I'm going to say is I feel like people have lost the ability to measure something evenly. Mm-hmm. And this X-Men film is not a great film. You know, I did see a handful of people who tried to imply that it was better than Civil War or as good as, and I laughed at them until they stopped talking, because that argument cannot be made. This film is not terrible. I mean, it's definitely not X3 Last Stand. It's definitely not a complete butchery of everything that is X-Men, but I will be honest with you and say that this film isn't great. It's not on the MCU level. It's not, I mean, the weakest of the MCU films still trumps this film, is my honest feeling.
Would you agree with that, Travis? I would absolutely agree with that. And I'm not doing that because I'm on your all show. I'd be like, you couldn't be more wrong, Paul. But no,
this conversation would be a lot more interesting.
I know. I really wish I could be right now. But yeah, I totally agree with you.
So basically, you know, the thing is, this movie has some really great scenes. There's I don't want to spoil any of the best parts of it. But, you know, there's a number of scenes that are really well done. Particularly something that happens in the second act. And then obviously everybody knows there's a Quicksilver scene. The Quicksilver scene's pretty good. It's definitely not the scene from the first movie. I'm sorry, not first movie, but the last movie with Quicksilver. It's not quite on that level, but it's still fun. You know, it's a good time. It's a little tongue-in-cheek this time. It's probably a little on the ridiculous scale, if you follow me. Like where it's just like a little bit implausible. But
now
that's
my favorite kind of X-Men, because there were too many times it got too dealing with the politics of the world of hate and mm-hmm. you know, race relations. So of course I use it for mutants, you know, and I get that. I learned a lot about accepting people and dealing with that. But I my favorite type of X-Men stories are the ones that are a little tongue in cheek, or especially that's implausible, but I like what you did there.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Charles, I think you've hit the nail on something that is a really fair criticism of this film. I think we've reached the point where I know I am a little tired of the main theme of every X film being about how humans hate mutants. And that is the whole story.
And that, fair enough, that's a main theme of the comics as well.
It's a big part of it, but it was not the main theme of every single Agreed. Issue of X-Men, you know, over the years. It's not been the main theme of it. I mean, X-Men has had its own, like, we're just a super team that's going to fight this other super team stories, you know? And there was potential for that here, and they just didn't, you know, it didn't really pan out that way. And I'm kind of rambling a little bit here because it's really tough to not just spoil a bunch of stuff. It's tough with only two of us having seen it. But basically, it's really unfortunate because this film had a lot of potential, and it just really didn't completely deliver, in my opinion.
I don't think this is spoiling anything, but like just some of the things that that really bothered me as I was watching the movie. You know, Apocalypse and Paul, please feel free to weigh in what you think. You know, at certain scenes, Apocalypse looked phenomenal. Like, he looked really, really good. And then other scenes, he looked like a dude in purple makeup.
Well, that's what you get when you pirate it, Travis. Jesus.
No.
No,
sir.
No, I mean.
No. I know he went to the theater. I'm just picking up.
That is actually, you know, you bring up a perfect point. Apocalypse, much like many of the CGI scenes in this movie, much like a lot of the, like, basically this movie is a hodgepodge of really good scenes and really kind of atrocious scenes. Like, the CGI, there are some scenes where the CGI is fantastic. It's beautiful. It's very detailed. It looks great. And then there are other scenes where it's like, did you have an intern do this in like a day? Because there's no detail. It's very basic. You know, the horsemen of the Apocalypse, like, frankly, outside of Magneto, they were kind of underwhelming. Angel was pretty good. Angel/Archangel was decent, but severely underutilized. Like, he was kind of a throwaway, particularly once he became Archangel. He, like, stopped having interesting dialogue once that happened. He stopped, you know, he just kind of was the brute force and then throw him away.
That's kind of that's what I remember of Archangel Warrington. Angel was the character, and when he got co-opted, converted, however you want to call it. When he became Archangel, he became that silent bruiser basher metal cool looking dude.
Well,
and then he was a throwaway character.
But the distinction
in
the comics, he was a linchpin of the Apocalypse storyline.
And to be fair, I haven't read that storyline. I've just read other stuff.
The whole thing about Angel / Archangel in the comics is this isn't a founding member of the X-Men that gets taken by Apocalypse and turned
his heir, basically.
You know, his horseman.
Yeah.
Right. And so, like, the whole thing is Archangel is a much deeper character in the comics. And when he eventually comes back and is an X-Men again, you know, rejoins the team and is a good guy again, it's so much more noteworthy. In this film, Storm, really good intro, but they really failed to capitalize on her. And I've used this phrase too often, but the characterization for Psylocke was a complete dumpster fire.
Yeah.
They completely butchered this character.
They changed her abilities. Terms of the
film. And
Let me
say this, because I was actually talking today at the firehouse with a guy who had seen it. He kind of felt like we did. He was like, well, it was great in some spots, and some spots I thought sucked. Now, this is not a comic book guy, mind you, okay? But this is a guy that loves the superhero movies, and he's going to go see every superhero movie goes out, but he knows absolutely nothing about them. And I was telling him, I was like, and he was asking me about the Psylocke character. And I said, well, they totally changed her abilities, which let me preface this by saying I'm fine with that. Some abilities don't translate well on the big screen. That's fine.
But psychic purple abilities absolutely do.
Right.
Well, they're there.
I'm just saying.
But the big issue with Psylocke's abilities in the film that I had is I've been calling it the lasso of truth.
Oh no.
Yeah. She manifests a psychic whip and wraps it around Beast's neck at one point. And I'm like, that is almost like shot for shot what happens in BVS at one part. And I'm like, that's a bad look coming off the heels of that other movie a month ago. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's like, now, why'd you take the psychic ninja and turn her into Wonder Woman?
I know. All right. Hold on. All right, I'm sorry. Lots of great stuff to talk about. We're running short on time. I know we want to get to one other thing. So I'm glad to hear what you guys have to say, the good and parts, bad parts.
Glad to hear that you don't have to go to
the doctor. Yeah, well, that too. But I am disappointed that they changed her abilities. However, I will say what I plan on doing is just taking as much as I can humanly possible – a one-off on this. Like, this movie stands alone. I'm going to watch it, see if I enjoy it. You know, as opposed, not comparing it to Avengers, not comparing it to Batman, not even comparing it to the other X-Men movies. I'm just going to take it as a story and watch it. And I recommend that everybody else does that too. So real quick, hit us up. If you've got opinions, you want things to do, GiantSizeTeamUp.com/breakingthepanel. You can leave a voicemail right there. We have the tab. It's really easy. Any device with a microphone will work. You can email us, btp@GiantSizeTeamUp.com. We'd love to hear from you. So we've got time for this poll, this
poll. Well, let me jump back in here. Let me wrap up the last topic real quick. We could talk at more length about that film. What I will say is the casting was pretty good. I just want to get that out there. I don't think that this was a case of the wrong people being the wrong characters. I think they did a really good job with casting. I just think the way the storytelling was structured and the way things were done in editing and post really kind of ruined a lot of the potential there. Now, that being said, though, that leads us into the fandom discussion, right?
Yes.
That's what we want to get into here. And we want to discuss the nature of fans and fandom and how it interacts with, you know, the various properties out there. And go ahead, Charles, just run away with this. You lob this one down the middle and we'll knock it out of the park.
This comes Travis brought it to the table. I've seen his stuff on Facebook. And this is by no means in depth. We'll probably be talking about it more as the shows go on, but we're just really short on time tonight. The idea is there's a petition going around saying, you know, basically make Bucky and Captain America boyfriends, or at least give Captain America a boyfriend. I've seen a lot of LGBT articles on this, specifically about it. Today, I saw an article on one about make Elsa, have Elsa have a girlfriend. And my whole stance on it, and Travis, I want you to say yours. You said it very well on Facebook. My whole stance on it is, we have openly said on this show over and over again, we're all for more mirror characters. And by that, I mean, that's a term I'm trying to coin right now, is that when you see it, it reflects you. Okay. Yes, we need more gay characters because there's more openly gay people. There's always been gay people. There's just more openly gay people now in society. They need to see somebody who reflects them. Absolutely. Why do you have to center on these linchpin characters that the rest of the world will hate you for and will fight you? And it actually doesn't really. Elsa, maybe. Elsa is an if or and. I mean, it's no one way or the other. But Captain America came up in the 40s. I'm not saying he couldn't be gay. I'm just saying if you try to change that, it's not going to work. I couldn't come up with the word. But Travis, you had a great way of saying this.
Friendship, camaraderie, brotherhood. I mean, that's what Cap and Bucky represent. And when I see this petition, I feel like now maybe this is knee jerk, but I'm like, wait a minute. Have you never had a buddy or somebody in the same sex that you would go to the wall with? I mean, go to the very line. And not want to have sex with? I mean, I don't understand the distinction. I get it that they do love each other. They are brothers because they're not related. They love each other and they are brothers. But to make them a homosexual is just, I don't know. It doesn't fit to me because that's not their story and you're trying to rewrite their story. You see what I'm saying? Did that make any sense?
Yeah. I feel like
if I can jump in on this.
Do it. Well, you didn't raise your hand, Klotz.
My feeling is very much that they're trying to sexualize a very intimate yet obviously platonic relationship. And the thing is, what really bothers me about this is I don't think sexual orientation is really what's important here, other than the fact that obviously there's an agenda that is being pushed and, you know, there's a reason why there are people who want these changes to be made. But the thing is, for me, is that you're injecting sexuality into relationships that maybe just shouldn't have it. I mean, if we were to switch things up and you were to take a male character and a female character that had a real close bond like this that didn't previously have a sexual relationship, if you were to suddenly force it into the sexual realm, there would be some people who would be like, whoa, come on, like, don't do that. Why does everything have to be a romantic involvement? Why can't there just be platonic friendships?
Hawkeye and Black Widow in the movies. Hawkeye and Black Widow would be that situation.
Right, yeah, they're friends. And so if in the next Avengers film you push a romance between them, it's going to, first of all, it's going to go against everything else that's been established so far. And it's like, come on. Like, well, and that's, you know, a perfect example. It's my issue, though, is just like, why are you drawing the battle lines here? Like, what I really think that people who want to be represented in media should be doing is pushing the companies to create characters that represent them, and
yes,
from the beginning, allow them to have these identities and have them allow them to rise up to be prominent characters in the story.
I'll even take the stand of we should be allowed to have established characters come out, as it were.
Sure. You know, absolutely.
But when you, I agree with Travis 100%. There is especially in America, and I believe throughout a lot of the world, because it's a man dominated world. We know there's other countries where they really just, men have all the rights, women have none. There is a huge problem with a man being able to be close friends with another man, you know, just in general. Especially in the South, where I live and where Travis lives, is you can't be bros or there's going to be slurs about homosexuality raised at you. And no, I'm with you, Jeffers. I've got a brother that's not my brother that I would do anything for. And I've been at the birth of his children. He's been at the birth of mine. We were at each other's weddings. There's stuff that would happen that I would even grow old with him if our families passed away. I just would never want to marry him or diddle him at all. You know, it's not that kind of and that's why I enjoy the Captain America Bucky relationship, because it's that. It's you don't understand that we're closer than family. But no, and another thing I take offense at with this is I hugely support the LGBT community. Absolutely, get your characters. But when you go after the number top character that it couldn't happen to, what are you really doing? Are you making him Hydra just to sell comic books? Because when you use this petition, you're getting headlines, but you're not actually doing anything for the community, and that pisses me off.
The other point that I have, too, is what if this situation was reversed? What if we were dealing with a traditionally homosexual character and there were people asking to make them a straight character or bi character?
It's hard to say because it's never been done, but I do see your theoretical point.
But it theoretically could be done. Like, well, let's say with Bobby Drake, you know, Iceman.
Right, right.
What if we take a turn on him being gay and he's not gay anymore? Like, the community would be in an uproar. And you know, to a certain degree, rightfully so. They'd be like, well, yeah. What are you doing? Like, and it's like you really shouldn't just like play with characters' sexuality and orientation willy-nilly like that. I think it's very disingenuous to the cause, to what you're trying to represent. Mm-hmm. And I think it's pandering, and I actually think it subverts any kind of, you know, progress that you might be trying to represent by doing something like that, because you're just you know, molding things to suddenly, you know, satisfy an outcry. And it's like, that's not the way to go about this. I actually think it's insulting. And I think the people who are pushing for this don't seem to realize that aspect of it, is that you're asking for something that you would be really upset about if it was done with a different orientation. You know what I mean? Like if the factors were a little bit different and this was suggested, you would be up the wall. Like if we were talking about a TV show with a traditionally gay character and they suddenly were like, oh,
Will and
well,
Grace,
they're going to...
If Will all of a sudden became straight at the end of that thing, right?
Yeah, exactly.
It would ruin the whole entire show from that point backwards.
I was at dinner this past weekend, and a good friend of mine, he's a nurse at one of the ERs. He's openly gay. We're friends on Facebook. I love this guy to death. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons I love him to death, he could outdrink me shot for shot any day of the week. He's got an awesome beard. I mean, you would look at this guy and never know that he was homosexual. But he is. He's awesome. I love him. And we were actually talking about it. And I was like, bro, leave my heroes alone. Get your own heroes. And he was like, he started laughing. He goes, yeah. He goes, no, you're right. He goes, I think it's utterly ridiculous. He said, but we don't have a Captain America, a gay character. We don't have that. And I'm like, no, that get it. That's not my problem. You leave my hero alone and get your own. You know? And he was like,
no, but he's got a good point there though, Travis. You know, there needs to be characters that represent people, but you have to stop taking popular characters and subverting them into, you know, being like shoehorning them into being representative later. You need to create a character, a badass character.
Midnighter. Watch my show. I talk about the Midnighter all the time. He is amazing. He's badass. He breaks the mold of what you think of a stereotypical homosexual male. And his comic book is amazing. There's your guy. A lot of people don't know who he even is. I was telling my buddy about him, and he was like, what is he again? I'm like, the Midnighter. And I'm Googling him, and I'm showing him. He's like, oh, that dude's badass. I'm like, yeah, there's your guy, man. Jump on him. Make him your new Cap. You know, I don't mean jump on him.
All right. I really have to hit the wall here. I would put out one last suggestion. I would be okay with the Hulk being gay. Because, I mean, look at how they've done the character. He's conflicted.
There is a Hulk character that's gay, though. Hulkling.
No. Yeah. But that's not the Hulk. That's but different. Still, I'm just saying, if you want your Captain America, you want your established.
No, you're undermining what we just established. Yeah. That you should.
He's never been established as a woman's man. He's never been established as a strong.
What are you
character.
Talking about?
He look at how he's portrayed as Bruce Banner. He's always conflicted. I love how they did it in the movies where he's him and Natasha are kind of doing this thing. He's like, what are we doing? I'm dangerous. That could easily be somebody who just doesn't know who he is, and lots of homosexual people struggle with that. I'm just saying it's possible.
He's had a long string of female counterparts over the years. I think you're grasping.
Maybe. It. Maybe. All right. Well, if you want to grasp, that's the wrong way to end that. Let me rephrase. Be careful what you ask for and what things you get behind, because it's not always in your best interest. So I think a lot of these groups that are getting headlines are just doing that. They're getting headlines and they're not actually trying to do what's best for you or the community or the world at large. And I do agree that getting more gay characters, even established ones, is good. But when you go after the Mount Rushmore of characters, it's just not. You're pissing in the wind, and that's a bad thing. So we've got to get out of here. You can find us at Breaking the Panel on giantsizeteamup.com/breakingthepanel. Of course, we're on iTunes. We're on Facebook, facebook.com/breakingthepanel. We have great conversations over there, tons of articles, tons of discussions. It is a way to play with us. And if you want to follow us on Twitter, it's at Panel Breakers. Or if you look up Breaking the Panel, that's our quote-unquote real name. Is Breaking the Panel and is at Panel Breakers on Twitter. Go vote, podcastawards.com, once a day, every day. Breaking the Panel in entertainment from the helicarrier in gaming. I'm just going to say for Klotz, for Travis. Travis, again, thank you for coming in and blazing Defender Report all over the internet. And I'm just going to end this one with do-do-do-do-do, darlings.
Come on. Breaking the Panel is the flagship podcast on the Giant Size Team Up Network. You can support the show at patreon.com/breakingthepanel, and you'll find more of our amazing podcasts at giantsizeteamup.com.